Okay. So let me go over here so I can read. Well, welcome everyone to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee meeting. It's November 18th, 2021. It is 6:01, and we will go ahead and begin. So I'd like to welcome everyone, our committee members and the public. Before we begin, does anyone have any disclosure of conflict of interest? Hearing none, let's move along. Have the committee members had the ability to review the meeting minutes as presented?
Yes, this is Steve.
Yes.
Okay, do I have a motion?
This is Leon.
Yes, I'm motion
to approve the minutes.
Yep,
oh,
that's Steve.
Okay.
There was a small typo in the action items. I don't know if that counts as anything. It was just about patients being behind in their levels. Other than that, that's all I saw.
Okay. Well, except with the typing issue noted. Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay. So moved. And let's see. Update from ADOA. So, Larry, do you have an update?
I have no new business from ADOA in regards to anything that would affect the IOC. The one update I do have, though, from what an action item from which you guys wanted me to check on, the new DHS director, if there's a timeline for that director yet, and I am not aware of a timeline or a candidate that they have identified yet. So as soon as I know something, I will let you know as soon as I can.
Okay, thank you. So on the phone number ending in 37, can you mute? It's star, is it star six?
Star six, yes.
And so I can read better. I'm going to turn my camera off for a moment. We can turn it back on later, but you can see me and my beautiful South African view. And now I'm going to turn off for a
while. Nice.
Okay. Okay, so let's move on. Okay, so updates from other IOCs. Do we have any other IOC members on? Is Jack on, or Northern or Southern?
Hi, Lori. It's Dorothy.
Hi, Dorothy. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us. Not much to report. We had our meeting Monday, and, you know, we've just kind of stalled with not being able to get into places. Frankly, electronic review and virtual review and things like that haven't been as robust as we had hoped, let me say. But I'm just grateful that we can network like we are. And, you know, we all feel up in the north like, you know, we're still learning, but we're going to keep at it until so long as we can be supporting people, the vulnerable people, and the severely mentally ill, and so on. You know, we're just gonna keep working at it until we have it, until we have something that works, and we're very sure that we're making a difference. So, but thank you. I'm interested to just listen in. So, thank you, Lori.
Thanks, Dorothy. This is Natalie, and I'm doing the minutes. Can you tell me your full name and what group you're from?
Of course. My name is Dorothy O'Brien. That's O'Brien.
Great.
And I'm the chairperson of the Northern Arizona Independent Oversight Committee.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. I'm going to mute now.
And Dorothy, if I forget something, yes, you can correct me. So we had an all-state chair committee meeting. And
yes, we did.
Yeah, most of the what went on there is we have, I think it really is helpful when the chairs get to talk to each other and other members can join too. We do quarterly meetings because we see what's working for some of the IOCs and what isn't working. So we have good discussion and support of each other's committees. I know the Northern has put in an inquiry request into a formal, how do they make a formal request? and they want those forms for Northern. I think Central has been doing okay with their request for information with the emails. And of course, I told them that with our agency that we're oversighting, everything has to go on a formal request and a documentation after being reviewed. So it's a little bit different. And there was inquiry over record keeping and applications for court ordered evaluation. So that was discussed a bit. Anything else, Dorothy, that you can think of from our meeting, or Larry?
Well, I just always find them so instructive and so humbling, really, because there's so much to still learn, the legislative parts, the legal parts, the jargon parts, you know. And I was interested to hear the process for some of the judicial, the court ordered treatment and things like that. It, again, just like you're saying, Lori, you know, we listen and we really glean so much from each other and each other's experience. So I appreciate that. And I'm going to ask my committee members when they can to join in. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so next we'll go over the review of our action items and briefly, let's see, educational session. We asked Ash what code they're following in regards to their administrative separation. So this is an ongoing concern that the hospital has one patient in an administrative separation. And last month, Melissa, who is an architect and is on the committee, presented some great information about architecturally kind of guidance and rules and new guides about not designing spaces intended to keep people for more than 12 hours. Isn't that correct, Melissa?
Well, the International Committee for the Red Cross, right? It's actually anything over 15 days is considered torture, is the way that it's phrased by the United Nations and the ICRC. But then, yes, then it also breaks down into much smaller amounts of time.
Okay. So we have continually asked and tried to get access to see the rooms, and basically that's been denied. Let's see, the patient, their response was the patients offered regular and provided active treatment on their forensic campus. The patient is offered psychotherapy, regular one-on-one, rehab services, daily patio times, and fitness times with the staff. So they're also offered opportunities to eat some meals with peers. These active treatment opportunities, social opportunities, are refused by the patient on an intermittent to regular basis, as documented in his medical report. Despite refusing treatment opportunities, they're still among the top 10% for active interaction with staff between all disciplines. So they're saying that the individual has plenty of interaction. And the rules outlining the use of administrative separation can be found in the Arizona Administrative Code, Title 9, Chapter 10. So again, this is an ongoing discussion that we hope resolves one way or another. The other was COVID impacting progression levels, and we asked basically who's making the choice, and they said that executive team made the original decision to restrict outings on March 16, 2020, aligned with ADHS's guidelines for congregate living settings, last revised April 2021. So they showed if community spread is equal to or greater than 10%, community outings are suspended. I did write back, and we did have a meeting, which Ashley can report our notes on that. But I did write back to Christina and to the hospital stating that you know, there, our positivity rate is 10%, but it's probably a skewed distribution since we're not just randomly testing people. People that are getting tested primarily are getting tested because they don't feel well or they know they've been exposed, but we're not doing a statewide random testing. And I did send them what ASU is doing because they do random testing, and their percent positivity rates on on-campus students is between 1.6 and 1.7%. Off-campus students, 2.3, 1.4. Cumulative is 1.4. A particular week was 2.3. Employees is cumulative 0.6, and for one particular week it was 1.89. So I think we're getting a skewed representation of our positivity. But I'm not sure. They thanked me for the information, so we'll see if they're going to look at that. And they gave us a document where they showed the positivity rate from AZDH at the time. And they said the hospital was open to passes from June 2nd, 2021 to July 21st, 2021. And during this time, the rehab staff accompanied those on level one or two. They attempted to schedule passes as many as possible without compromising the hospital-based programming. They said they achieved a more frequent pass schedule than usual prior to the hold on passes during that time. They also say of the 114 patients on forensic, only 28 have achieved sufficient psychiatric stability and exhibited consistently appropriate behaviors to even be eligible for the privilege of passes. And again, their main concern was for the safety of everyone else back in the unit. So Ashley, do you want to jump in and give your, we requested to meet with the governor's office, and we met with Christina Corrieri first, who is a senior policy advisor. And then I know I touched base with Christina, and she is talking to the Department of Health interim director. So Ashley, if you want to give kind of the highlights of our escalation meeting with her.
I was going to talk about our conversation with Bowen and Woods, because we kind of filled Christina in on that. Is that what you want me to talk about?
Okay. We met with, before we could meet with an external entity, Larry suggested that we meet with hospital administration first. So it was Melissa and Ashley and myself met with Dr. Bowen, Dr. Woods, Lisa Nguyen, head of nursing, and I think a grievance.
I think Alice was on that call too.
Okay.
I'll give a few highlights. You touched on some of them already. The 114 patients between forensic and CRU. There's 10 patients on CRU. There's only, I think, 16 patients who are eligible for passes. So we were kind of talking about like the how COVID is affecting progression and how that's leading to hopelessness and kind of the conversations we've had in the past and kind of got the hospital's perspective on that, and that really, you know, COVID's affecting everyone, which we all understand. The hospital did suggest that if we can maybe form a, well, this was my suggestion, forming a subcommittee to brainstorm ideas for passes or like come in an executive session or something like that, some other alternative. Really, the difficulty is the PSRB and the hospital, at least in my opinion. Woods talked about the distinction between civil and forensic criteria and how different those are. We also talked to him about masks and why, you know, the masks aren't a thing at the hospital, and got some clarification on how dangerous it can be, which Alice agreed with. Let me see what else I'm missing. Dr. Bowen said they had reached out to the Department of Health and to ask if they had any plans to revise the COVID protocols. They're looking into that, but they haven't received an update from the Department of Health, so they're going off the most recent Department of Health guidelines. Let's see. Sorry, I'm scrolling through my notes really quick. That's a highlight. And then when we talked to Christina, we kind of filled her in on some of our concerns. But really, it was just us kind of filling her in, and she was going to get back to us. So I don't know if we've scheduled another meeting or Lori, if you want to jump back in.
I checked back with her because she was going to get back to me on Tuesday. And when I checked back, she said she went ahead and met with Department of Health director, she was planning to, and they're trying to get their opinion on it as well. The other thing that there were a couple other points from our meeting with Dr. Bowen and his staff was that Dr. Bowen reminded all of us that when he came in 2015, one of the first things he did was to reverse or to change a policy that forensic patients had to serve 50% of their time before even being considered for release. And he thought that that was just arbitrary and that it should be based on the patient's progression. So he did want to remind us that he was an advocate for making sure that people could progress based on their treatment and their recovery, not just based on the timeline. In addition, it was illuminating because they did mention that they had recommended patients for progression during this time, even though they haven't had outings. So I think my response was, have you told everyone and are you communicating that so people can understand that that's a possibility? Because that would be probably welcomed by the patients knowing that. And I don't think they had.
I had a note that it was either Woods or Bowen said that all of the patients have, because Alice asked, like, do they have printouts of their plans and what they need to do to progress? And the answer was yes. They've all been told, I don't know if they have printouts, but they've all been told, all the patients have been told what they need to do. But yeah, he did mention, I forget how many he said four. I don't think I have it in mind how many he had just recently recommended without passes to move up. So yeah, those are really good points.
I think other than that, I think the other thing Dr. Bowen had asked us to refrain from insinuating that the sentinel incidents that have occurred were anywhere related to lack of progression or hopelessness.
Yeah, that's true. But it's been hard. I think he talked about how it's been hard for staff and for administration and for the patient with the things that have been going on and the sentinel events, and that by continuing to refer to it as being a direct correlation back to the passes and hopelessness is not helping anyone, not doing anyone good. And so I'd asked us to refrain. So,
okay. So we will be probably hearing back from the governor's office on what their thoughts are on progression and community spread. Because, you know, we've pointed out too that staff come in and out all day, and we understand that there would have to be precautions, and we're not saying be careless, but make sure they're vaccinated, make sure they wear a mask, make sure they go to sparsely populated areas. We're asking for them to take that into consideration. But I think it's up to us to come up with some ideas and bounce it back to them if we don't get a positive or support from the governor's office or from Department of Health Administration. Let's see. We did also ask about grief counseling after these events, and they've offered both formally and informally to their staff. For their patients, they said they re-altered and their programming, and they respond to each situation appropriately to ensure people are safe. As far as from the last meeting, people thinking that CRU was going away, it's open, it's housing forensic patients with more advanced phases and levels, with the exception of that one period when it was shut and it was used for, as a COVID unit. Let's see, there's no immediate plans to utilize the space for anything else or relocate the current patients that are there. So any questions on their responses to our action items? Okay, do you want to do a report of our visits? And did I hear a question? Okay, after we get through with the report on the visits, then we'll go ahead and go into a community forum educational session where patients will be able to speak, and I'll give the guidelines around that, and committee members or members of the public can ask questions also. So, Melissa, do you want to go over our patient visits for last month?
Sure. I think we have three. Mm-hmm. So I'll go ahead and start. So the first patient that we visited, the main issue that was discussed was about the levels system. And actually we just talked about this a little earlier. But the issue, the difference between outings and the visitations. And actually reference was made to some of the statistics that were just discussed, that Lori, you discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. This person also made, you know, some references to that and, you know, was conveying that the outings and the visitations, that there's very different purposes for that, that, you know, the outing is essentially court order from the PSRB. And was just like you said, and was you know, alleging that Ash says that the Department of Health Services was restricting the ability for the outings. And then also just sort of stressed that they had an order from PSRB to reintegrate into the community. The next topic that was discussed was about about the tragedy, about the suicide that or the tragedy that happened. And it was this person's, you know, opinion, right, that what happened was the direct result of not being able to go out. Mm-hmm. And because that pause was seemingly indefinite, right, mm-hmm. that people were losing hope. And this person in particular was trying to help that individual out by, you know, doing some activities with that person. Also said that that person that they were referring to, it was hard for them to tell how much sort of contact they had with others, but knew that that person had really looked forward to going out. And then I think there was a question about whether or not the hospital was you know, speaking to the patients about what had happened. And they said that the hospital offered that they would speak with the treatment teams Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then with the patients. So that's what I have for the first person. I don't know, Lori, if you had anything to add.
No, I mean, I think that was it. The other thing I had noted was that the patients were, he was commenting on the fact that the person was not attending groups. They were staying on unit. They tended to, in their opinion, be depressed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So I'll go ahead and move on to the second person. Then the second visit that we had, this patient was expressing that they were dealing with quite a bit of, again, what they felt was emotional abuse from the staff. And at that moment, actually, that we were on the phone with them visiting, they were waiting for the police to come to be able to write a report. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, again, alleging that what the staff was doing was punitive. That the staff was taking away computer use, and the patient was also kind of confused because they would be ordered to do something that made no sense. You know, the example they gave was like someone dropped some trash in the kitchen, and then they were ordered by staff to pick it up. But he, you know, they had just washed their hands, and he didn't want to do that. And then there was, you know, a consequence to that. Let's see.
Yeah, I think what bothered me about that interaction also was that it wasn't him misbehaving and getting, yeah. And mm-hmm. then when he wanted to write an incident report up and a grievance, he was going to write the person up, and he needed the person's last name, and the person took off their badge. So to prevent him from seeing the last name, which I thought was juvenile. And then he asked the head nurse, and the head nurse refused as well, saying file a complaint. So
Right. That's yeah. right. And I hadn't yeah. even written down like maybe that he had said that they had said in no, get away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then the second issue this patient brought up had to do with the service animal lawsuit that they had filed in court. And so they were giving us an update on that. They'd been very successful in getting animal assisted treatment added to the plan. So that was a good thing. Mm-hmm. But there seemed to be a lot of other obstacles about actually getting the animal or getting the assisted treatment actually implemented. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't know if I could say the doctor's name, but one of the doctors acknowledged the ruling, but allegedly, you know, changed the wording. And then there was, you know, another comment about, they said they wanted to, but that they couldn't find any service to be able to fulfill, you know, the treatment. So then again, this patient filed an order. Then they talked a lot about some more emotional abuse, saying getting the brunt of it because, you know, again, this patient's very, very active in asserting their rights, right, and filing these different lawsuits or motions. And again, the retaliation, I'm using that word, I guess, but to kind of describe it, started changing when the lawsuit was first filed. And then another issue had to do with no access to the law library. You know, it was their understanding that the computers are essentially the access to the law library. And they're not having access to the computer. Because apparently the patient is maybe misbehaving, but then if they don't have the computer privilege, then they're also not being able to have access to the law library.
Yeah, that was an issue because allegedly in the hearing when patients should have access to the law library, the patient advocate said to the judge that they have unlimited access, and that was the law library. So I think that now there's an issue between that patient and the patient advocate, and also access to the legal library. And again, he was restricted from using it for a behavior of another patient, not for his behavior, but they wanted him to clean up after another patient, and he said no. So they said, you just lost your computer use, which we thought that was not okay.
Yeah, and he also said, you know, it wasn't, in addition to it being about the access, it was also causing, you know, great distress.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, they had asked to go to one of the units because, you know, less people were necessarily using the computers in the one unit. So it really shouldn't have been a problem as far as, you know, time on the computer. You know, he wasn't taking time away from anyone else, was kind of the, mm-hmm. the gist of what he was saying. So it really shouldn't have been, well, it didn't seem like that would have been an issue, the time spent on there. There was also a question about whether or not the Arizona Center for Disability was something that was, you know, if that was helping him. You know, they had worked with ACDL in the past, but I guess maybe they've either been too overloaded or hadn't been helping as much. So they were kind of advocating for themselves more on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, the, I think this is, well, then they also talked about, again, the tragedy at the hospital, and talked about some of the same things that were mentioned before about the CRU, saying that that patient needed some help to take care of themselves, but wasn't dangerous, kind of told the history or what they thought the history was about. Again, that patient had been at CRU for about 3 months and then sent back to forensic because maybe was eating too much, lost their levels. Also said, again, this is all, you know, alleged, but that staff at forensic were making fun of that patient.
Yeah, and that they observed that they thought the person was depressed and decompensating. From what they observed. So they were a little concerned that it wasn't seen.
And that there wasn't that therapeutic intervention, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Let's see. And then I think by then towards the end of the conversation, I think the police came.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then he talked about those issues too, that when they try, sometimes when they write a report, when the police department says that it's an administrative issue and that they should stop making frivolous reports, you know, their words. And then they talked with the police oversight and it was good for a while. It was okay that they were still, you know, writing those reports, and then it stopped again. And I was being told again that it was an administrative issue and should not be contacting the police. And I think that's it for that. Did you have any more on that, Lori?
Not on that one. And then we had our last patient we visited.
Yeah. So the last patient that day, I have to say we noticed that they sounded really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I guess, they weren't informed, and I think maybe, they were sleeping, but still sounded really sad and really bad. And talked about some visits to a doctor, to a neurologist, where some medicine was prescribed, and then doubled, that amount was doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some, some confusion about like why was some of the medication taking so long to adjust? Then also talked about, so that was one issue and one type of medication. Then they were talking about their shoulder and how they went to an orthopedic surgeon, but was told that that it would heal itself, and they, you know, they didn't know how that was going to happen, and they were in constant pain. The next issue had to do with the fact that he talked about that the hospital is trying to implement a behavioral modification, but they hadn't seen a plan. And he was very concerned because, you know, he's getting shifted between units every 90 to 120 days, which is very stressful, very stressful. And then I think we asked, you know, if that potentially shifted the treatment teams. And the answer was yes. And then there was some concern also that policy says that you should meet that team within 72 hours. But where they are right now, they had yet to meet. Do I have that right, Lori? I think it was like, yes. Okay, thanks. There was another situation. Then there was some, there was another situation with the fact that his water bottle was taken away, and he was in an altercation and his water bottle was taken away. There was, they have a CPAP machine and that's out of date and on recall, but was told that they need to use it for another 6 to 9 months. And, you know, he's very uncomfortable using it, and was told, well, you know, and then he said he was told, you know, basically, then you're going to go without, right? Either use this or you'll go without. Sorry, I have a lot of notes here. This was an issue where they were very sad, very concerned that when this patient goes to the outside clinic, it requires two transport staff and one staff from the unit. Mm-hmm. So this leaves the unit staff short, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore they have to shut down part of the patio, but anyway, they have to shut down part of the program there, because then there's not enough staff left at the unit. And, you know, so he's wondering, you know, why do you need this many people when everyone else only takes two people? And this patient happens to use a walker, so they're not going to run, but feels bad that it's taking away maybe activities or amenities from the rest of the people in the unit. And this was really it definitely sounded like it was causing the patient some stress. And there was
the only other thing I had, Melissa, was another question. There was a concern question about how can a security person become a BHT tech switching positions without apparent training, like quickly. So that was concerning, like how can you go from being this one day and the next day you're a behavioral health tech? And is this just due to staffing shortages, and is this okay? Isn't there any training? How do we know they're getting training? That kind of questioning. So do you have anything else? And for the committee, and we also have Barb and Kim on, Natalie, for the notes, but is there anything that you heard that you'd like us to follow up on?
Got it. Thank you.
I did.
Hey, Lori, it's Dee. I was muted earlier. I couldn't see. I thought I was talking to you guys, but I do have the Office of Therapy Dogs
that I spoke to about meeting the requirements. The hospital's been wanting for the therapy dog, and they do have somebody available. So I don't want to, elaborate on that here. However, no, that is not true. We do have somebody that can fulfill this requirement from the hospital and fulfill the order and help the patient with the therapy dog need.
That's so good. Now, Dee, is that something like ATP or APT or ADT, something like that?
Yeah, ATD is the, okay. It's the therapy dogs. In fact, I think I may have mentioned this to you, but I just want you to know that they told me, well, maybe you should reach out to this other group, which is the one that I actually reached out to the first time that they said didn't have certified therapy dogs. And she was like, what? Absolutely they do. So I don't know what's going on there, but I wanted to throw that out so you guys could hear that. I had something else I wanted to say earlier, but now I've forgotten what it was. So,
well, you can jump back in.
Sorry.
So one thing, we do have good news. Today when I called to ask some questions on some of the incident reports, incident and accident reports, I asked if they had any updates, and they do have an update that they have completed. They're working on the contract, the rehab team with the animal pet therapy group, ADT, and they're almost through that process to where they will become a certified or approved vendor, and then they have to find a local volunteer that will agree to come into the hospital. So that's moving ahead. So that was good news. So, and I'll give you some others, but is there anything else? I did talk to the administration when we heard about the retribution for not doing a task and then not giving a last name so they could fill out a report. But do we want to vote on anything? Because I thought that seemed quite petty that a staff wouldn't give you their last name and the charge nurse wouldn't either.
Yeah, I think we should vote on that. This is Dee.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to add that.
What should we ask?
I mean, Lori, since you've already brought it up with them, should our question be like, is there any resolution to that? Or?
And what is a resolution for that situation or a situation when someone wants to write a report and then staffing is actually getting in the way of them filing a report actively, right? That's one.
Yeah.
And two, what is his access to a legal library if it's only via computer and they restrict his access?
Yeah.
Yeah, that type of behavior, this is Dee, that type of behavior is, I'm sorry, completely out of line and almost obscene that they would treat somebody like that.
Yep.
That's not right.
We
and
have
then the other
motions. Okay.
Should we vote on those and then?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make the motion. This is Ashley.
This is Dee. I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. So the motion passes.
The third one, I was with the patient with the walker who requires three people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just seems like I that seems
another
really
absurdity, right?
Especially
yeah,
since you're so short staffed.
Yeah, and I don't know the gender, but the patient obviously can't go very far quickly. And I certainly understand that patient's concern for taking away. I mean, that shouldn't be the patient's concern, but I understand the patient's concern about taking away things from the other patients. So maybe we can have the hospital look into that and see if they can bump it down to two people.
Okay.
There might be a reason that we don't know of, but
okay. Okay, we'll ask. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
The other one on, let me think, I was thinking, so look into, there was another thing that I thought we may want to look into. Let me rethink.
While you're thinking, Lori, I remember what I wanted to say. I'd like to understand why the community reintegration, you have the CRU, which has 28 beds, I'm sorry, 23 beds, cannot be full. Like, why can they not move the people that have earned that right to go there, to go there? Like, I guess, is that another staffing issue? I mean, I'd like to know what's going on there.
Okay.
Did you say there was only 10 patients on the unit? Is that correct?
Let me see.
Well, you guys, what's the unit co-op that has the beds that we're discussing right now?
CRU.
CRU.
Thank you.
Yeah. It has 10 patients.
I got the sense that it has that amount because those are the patients that are at that. I could be wrong, but that's what I got.
In the stuff that they sent us for this meeting, it says there's 26 patients that are eligible. And so there's 23 beds and there's only 10 patients there.
Okay, we can ask for clarification on that.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we do have two Sentinel events that we can discuss, or we can listen to the patients, and I'll have some rules around that, and then go to accident and incidents and the two Sentinel events. It's up to the committee. What do you want to hear from the patients first? And you can ask questions because this will be educational, and then we can go back to our meeting. Or do you want to hear about the Sentinel events and then patients? I'm easy either way.
So I vote we talk to the patients. We definitely need to talk about the issues with the Sentinel events, because without talking about them, then we can't move forward on that. So I think we should hear from the patients. I don't know if there's going to be a time limit for them, or as far as them asking questions. I don't know. Go ahead.
I think what we'll try to do, and I think administration obviously was concerned that it would become a session where they would just discuss the staff. So what I'd like the patients to do is, if you have a situation that you'd like to discuss that we can ask questions about, that we don't use the provider's name, you could say it's a behavioral tech, or it's a security, or it's a physician. And if we need to, based on the line of conversation or based on questions, if we need to get who it is and details after, I'll work with you guys or Jackie or Larry to try to get the identification, or we'll call the units and talk to you after the fact. Now, when you speak, remember, you can say whether you want your name on the record, or you don't need to disclose anything on record, but try not to make this just about, you can make it about a person, but don't use their name. And then it's open to the public to ask questions. I'm not sure how many people will want to talk, so to make sure it's reasonable, can we start with 3 minutes, and then we'll go with 3 minutes of questions and answers, 3 to 5 minutes. If we have time and not a lot of patients, then we can circle back around again. But I just want to make sure everyone has adequate time. How does that sound?
That sounds
okay.
Good.
Okay. So do we have anyone, any patient that would like to talk about anything going on that's of concern for the Human Rights Committee, and or things that you would like to share with us that we could ask questions and actually learn, be educated on topics that we're unfamiliar with?
Hi, this is Bobby Blansett.
Hi, Bobby. Do you want your name in the minutes?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So this past several days has been pretty bad over on Mojave. It kind of goes hand in hand with the staff shortage issues. We've had two code grays over here. The first one was involving, or actually, I'm sorry, there was only one code gray. There should have been two. Two patients got into a verbal argument. One of those patients assaulted staff, and they did not call a code gray. They didn't do anything. And then the next day, they ended up moving this patient. He got into another code gray on a different unit, which made another patient have to leave. And then that person that they moved again to a different unit got in another code gray. So this has been from one individual causing problems on three different units for no reason. And the staff is handling this in some sort of bizarre way where they're tanking this one patient and showing him favoritism to move him over to one unit. And then they move two patients from there off of that unit to accommodate him. And then they're going to bring this patient back over to Mojave in 6 weeks when the patient that he got involved with an argument with is gone, because they're moving that patient around every 3 to 6 months on some sort of other behavioral modification plan without one. So that was 2 days ago. The other thing that happened is that me personally, I had a patient last night threaten to murder me. He is here for murder. And he was shouting off to other patients about how he was going to sneak up on me behind the bed when I go into the bathroom in the morning so that he could kill me and that he was going to get away with it. And, so I didn't hear this. I had another patient come and tell me that I needed to watch my back. So I went to staff and I reported the issue. And they put him on a one-to-one. And then today, he has been on this one-to-one. But when I talked to nursing staff about what was going to happen as a result of this, they said, oh, well, he didn't mean what he was saying. This was actually just a result of his mental illness. And because he's no longer, we reassessed him and he's no longer a danger, we're going to take him off the one-to-one. So I have levels, I have been doing everything that I need to do to get out of here. And it's absolutely hopeless because there's nothing that we can do to speed things along. When we advocate for ourselves, we're punished. The Dr. Bowen and the rest of the administration, it feels like there's nothing wrong. And that's not the case. All of us here are trying our best, and we don't know what these arbitrary things are that they are claiming we need to do for progression. My treatment team has not come to me and said, oh, well, we're going to skip you levels even though you haven't completed that. No, the answer that I always get on a consistent basis is no, you have to wait, you have to do everything. And yet I've seen other patients on other units get progressed. And for what? Why is there an uneven application of things? Why am I not being moved to this CRU, to the least restrictive environment? That is what is in the court order, the PSRB's order, the least restrictive environment. And I'm still in the most restrictive environment. And I'm being around people that are actively dangerous. And I should also say, this patient that threatened me had just this week previously gone and assaulted another patient, and he is still on this unit and he's still causing problems, unstable, and it's stressful.
Thank you, Bobby. That was 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So anyone have any questions for Bobby? I mean, Bobby, can you escalate this as far as you don't feel safe with this person?
I have nobody from the treatment team or staff has come to talk to me about the issue at all today. They didn't come and talk to me last night after it happened. I had to approach them and then I heard nothing about it. They've had this patient, they're so short staffed today that they have had this patient sitting in the hallway with another staff member so that they could do two things at once. So they can keep and monitor the hallway and they can monitor him at the same time. But I can't go past this area into my room or out of my room without passing him. And nobody cares. Nobody comes to talk to you. Nobody says anything. I was supposed to have an IDTP today and they canceled it. My mother drove in from Tucson, and after receiving an email a few hours earlier that everything was good, and then they canceled it. And it's like, you know, so that was supposed to be my opportunity to say something, to talk to them, and they took it away from me.
Yeah, that's doesn't sound therapeutic at all.
It's not.
Bobby, I'm sorry to hear that.
May I ask Bobby a question?
Yes.
Bobby, I'm so sorry to hear what you're going through. It just sounds pretty dreadful. And my question is, has there been anybody, advocate-wise, I know there's a patient advocate, but is there no other process? I understand the treatment team is not hearing you. They don't seem to be hearing you or seeing you. Is there anyone else that you know of that you can reach out for there?
No, they don't have anything. In fact, if I were to go to other staff members, they would call it staff splitting. They were telling me, and I've had other situations like this in the past where I've been sexually assaulted, I've been physically assaulted, I've been verbally assaulted, threatened. And every time that I bring it to the staff's attention, they tell me I'm not focusing on my own treatment, that I am allowing things that don't concern me to interfere with my functioning. If I try to make a complaint, they victim blame me. So at this point, what I've learned is that they're going to do what they're going to do. I don't have any recourse to advocate for myself or to prevent things. And even if I were to go and I would say, like, hey, I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe. They go, oh, well, you know, he's sick. This is just part of his mental illness. He doesn't mean any of it. This is just his cycle.
Wow.
Do other patients feel unsafe also around this particular person?
I would say yes. And this goes hand in hand with the other patient that we had over here. That patient had attacked 4 different people in the last, 6 months, and has still been over here and causing all kinds of problems. And no, we don't feel safe. And it's no concern. Every time that we bring it up about how, like, this patient has a pen, he's got a full-size pencil. No, nobody over here has a full-size pencil. But the one that's most dangerous is the one that they gave a full-size pencil to. And when we bring up these things, oh, well, that's part of his treatment plan. You don't have any business having any comment or an opinion about it.
Wow.
Yeah,
and I have another question, maybe Lori. It would seem to me that filing a grievance, and I know that can wear you right down. I know that. But it would seem to me that if a paper trail could be built about this, Bobby, that there would be a better chance to get some satisfaction and some protection about the whole situation. Now that could just be, I could just be dreaming that in the real world that could happen. But it would seem to me that every time, and you know, that would be a powerful paper trail. If every time you're talking about Bobby, that something like that could be filed. I don't know.
You do know that they get punished for fighting grievances. Like, that's part of the retaliation that's going on, is that's how they're punished. You write a grievance, you're punished.
Yeah, and hospital administration has vehemently denied that there's any retaliation that goes on. So, I mean, if you do file and we're watching and all of a sudden you go backwards, maybe that would be a case for retaliation, kind of blatant.
I'm willing to file a grievance and create this paper trail. And what I will say is that even when we put them in the box, it takes a week to 2 weeks for them to get it, another 5 days for them to process it, another 10 days after the business days, mind you, to come and interview us. And then by the time that that's happened, like this issue, any issue is just escalated. And the last grievance that I put in, they put extensions in every month for 90 days. And then and in the 3 years that I've been here, I've filed 20, 30 grievances maybe. And each one that I've ever filed has become unsubstantiated by the committee that reviews things. Doesn't matter what the claim is. They don't give a reason for it. The entire grievance process is a sham. There's and the slow time frames with which they do things just means that, you know, you're still living in a state of fear, waiting for them to come and protect you or to make some sort of an action. And in the meantime, they're just building up a case of how they're going to manage and handle us, how they're going to twist it around so that it works to their benefit. And I got criticized. I got held back in my progression for being vocal. And so it's apprehensive for me to do that. And if you're suggesting that I do that, I'm willing to, just so long as that everybody knows that this is what the process is like each and every time.
I'm sorry, Bobby. Yeah. I don't want to imply in any way that you're not willing to do that. I don't, and I certainly don't want you to be retaliated against. I mean, that's horrifying. Mm-hmm. But I hear you, and I think you know that. We see you, we hear you. What to do about it? Wow.
Thanks, Bobby. Okay, do we have anyone else that would like to share?
Hi, my name is Kay Coons. I'm on the SAGO unit. I want to talk about, like, we've been chronically understaffed for a while. Like,
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you repeat your name and do you want it in the minute?
Sure. My name is Kay Coons. My last name is K-U-N-E-S. I'm on the SAGO unit, and I just want to comment that we've been chronically understaffed, like both in terms of like the techs and the nurses. Last Sunday, we were down to one nurse and one tech for a unit of 16 patients overnight, where actually somebody has stabbed somebody with a pen here and stuff. And I just don't feel like the hospital is really doing enough to retain and keep some of these employees. And I don't know where we file a complaint. I mean, I guess having something down on paper is probably pretty good. But it's also affected like us being able to go on mall walks and things like that. So it's been pretty frustrating.
It sounds dismal. I mean, as far as if staffing levels are down to one nurse and one tech for 16 patients, that doesn't seem safe.
It's not. And there are people here that have done violent things with just, you know, like a pen, you know what I mean? So I don't know. And it doesn't seem like the hospital is really trying to hire, or maybe they're not paying enough to retain them. But it just seems like we've been chronically understaffed for like the last few months. So that's my only complaint.
I know that that they had, I'm trying to remember, it was like 85, or they had a lot of open positions. And I hope that they can do something, whether it's hazard pay. But one of our committee members, who is a psych nurse, had to go into work because they're so short-staffed at other psych units as well. So it's not an excuse, but they're going to have to do something.
They did have their pay, and it seemed like a lot of people had quit or something. Like it seemed like it caused staffing shortage. I also think that it's kind of ironic that they're sitting there cutting hazard pay of their employees, but at the same time not letting patients out on levels. So which is it? Is COVID out there and dangerous, and is this a concern, or is this not a concern? Like it just seems like the hospital just kind of picks and chooses what they what they, what, whatever suits them. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Any questions for Keynes?
I have a question. This is Dorothy. Keynes, are you able to do your program? Is the lack of staff impeding your ability to do your program?
We don't get mall walks Friday through Monday because so that's like a 1 hour thing for people who have full malls to walk around the inner campus. And then also our patio time gets cut a little bit because they don't have enough staffing to do patio.
Oh, that's too bad. That's really bad.
Yeah, it's our outside time. So it does affect you know what I mean?
And I think being outside is so therapeutic too.
Right.
When the weather's nice, it's so nice being outside of those walls and that lighting. Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you. Anyone else would like to share?
Hi, this is Kareem on the Cottonwood unit.
Hi, Kareem. Do you want your name in the minutes?
Sure.
Okay. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So I can just kind of echo with the short staff. We've been short staffed here very frequently. We have 2 1-to-1s, now 3 1-to-1s here, and there are maybe 1 or 2 techs otherwise. A lot of times they are doubling where they're having a tech do a 1-to-1 and then also watch like the day room or the hall at the same time. This evening, they're unable to allow people to do the IOC meeting except for on the phones in the unit, because they don't have enough staff to watch over the phone.
Okay.
So, so a lot of people who want to be in the IOC meeting, they're not being allowed the opportunity. Only if they were able to get on one of the phones here on the unit are they able to do it. So the staffing's been really bad here for a while. There's been, but it seems like recently it's been worse for sure.
Well, that's too bad, because I really asked that they make sure that all the units had the ability to call in and that they were able to.
No, there's people here who are not able to be on the IOC meeting who do want to be on it.
Well, let them know that we'll do it again next month, so they'll have another opportunity. Hopefully they'll figure out their staffing shortages.
Yeah.
Anything else, Kareem?
That's really it. I mean, I feel like the unit here can be really loud at times, and it's a very untherapeutic environment, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Anyone else like to share?
I have one more statement. This is Kay again on Sago. I had reached out to Jackie a couple of times to see if I could fill out the patient representative on the IOC, and she hasn't responded to me at all, so I don't know what I should do next.
Okay, let me give her a call, because when we were in the forensic community forum, you asked, and we were standing there, and she said she was going to get you the application, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'll reach out to her.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other patients or anyone from the public would like to share, ask a question?
Remember Hi, this is Timber Briscoe on Mojave.
Hi, Tim. How are you tonight?
I've been better.
I'm
glad to hear from you guys. Yes, please.
Okay. Sorry, we have to ask every time.
In the last few days here, one of my peers just got the phone with you guys. He told you about how there was an altercation between me and another patient that had assaulted three or four other peers and has a full length pencil. We were in a verbal altercation. I was walking away and to a different room to where it was a locked door, and just to defuse the situation to get away, he was coming through three staff, hit one of the staff, and no code was called on him. Yet the following day, they removed all the tables out of the dining, out of the day room where we ate, and said we had eaten in the kitchen. Well, I sat out in the day room and ate, and there was a code called on me. Mm-hmm. And I was calm, cool, collective, cool as a cucumber, and all I wanted to do was eat my breakfast. And there were 25 to 30 security guards and staff members that rushed down here to make sure that I wasn't misbehaving. I asked I couldn't even eat my breakfast without being almost attacked by these people. They sat there and watched me eat, and I ate very slowly. Took my time. And they took the table outside that I was using to have my tray on. So I backed up and I put it on my walker. And that really irked them because they couldn't take my walker from me. Anyways, they called a code on that. Where am I going with this? I got a staffing today, and I told them about that, and they asked me how I was doing, and I told them I got some really bad news. And remember how I tell you that I pray to God every night for a heart attack?
Yeah.
Well, I'm really doing that now, and it's even looking more grim. I got some really bad news about my mom, and I feel very, 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 very hopeless, and I don't know what to do. I'm very thankful that I'm here on Mojave with my friend Bobby, my friend Casey, and my friend Jason, and my friend David. I don't know how long that's going to last, because I'm on their little hit list and be moved every 60 to 90 days or 90 to 120 days. And
yeah. What's the reason that they give you to move units so frequently?
To move so frequently, to focus on myself, so I can focus on myself. I can't even focus on what unit I'm on because I can't remember where I'm at. I take 60 pills a day, and I take 5, sometimes 6 shots of insulin a day, and I can't even remember what unit I'm on sometimes. Because they're moving me so frequently, and the pills, they play a part in my memory. Things ain't looking well. And
Tim, can you ask to speak to, I know they have clergy that come there, or maybe someone from, someone to provide some therapy for grief counseling for whatever news that, setting you?
Well, I have a therapist, but all they've been doing is aggravating and upsetting me, and then I vent to him because I can't vent to my mom no more because I don't want to upset her no more.
I'm so sorry, Tim, that this is happening to you and to your mom.
Thank you, but I don't know if the clergy, I could talk to him, but I don't know if they have a grief counselor. They haven't shown anybody a grief counselor. They haven't let anybody know they have a grief counselor for the suicide that happened here. There's people grieving, and they haven't offered any type of therapy or grief counseling with that.
Yeah, they told me they offered the grief counseling to staff.
To staff?
Yeah, and that for patients, they were incorporating grief counseling into their treatment plans.
Oh, they're incorporating it to their treatment plans. Well, I haven't had any of that. I had an IDTP today. They didn't incorporate it to my treatment plan. The staff that they probably gave the grief counseling to was probably the one that denied the man to show his stamp collection and was very rude to him and put the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm.
That's what I would assume. But things here, there's been no grief counseling for anybody. Nobody's coming around to ask us how we're doing, if anybody needs to talk. Plus the short staffness, where would they come from? You know, I had to deny a appointment for the hand clinic today because I had a IDTP scheduled at the same time. They didn't inform me until yesterday about this. I had one last week that I was going to go to a neurologist, which I need really bad. They didn't inform my mom or my mom, which is still my guardian now, thank God. But by law, I believe they're supposed to inform her 24 hours in advance of any outside medical appointments off-site. And there was none of that. They came at me like 5 minutes here, you got an appointment, you going? I was like, no, what? So, but things are just getting worse here at Ash. And they just keep blowing smoke screens. So I wish there was not so much punitive. The computer situation with the law library, there is no law library, at least mental health law, only criminal law. And like you need to have access to the library or to the computer lab, and that's only once every 2 weeks for an hour. So I don't think anybody's going to get any time really, anything really researched or done if they needed it. And I believe you have to have full mall to have that too. And I've been here going on 5 years in December, and I've had full mall probably a total of 6 months. So, and I'm going to miss the Christmas party again this year because I'm not full mall. I've only had computer lab. I've been over to computer lab once. And, you know.
So it seems like they need to come up with another law library if the restrictions are such that the law library is really not accessible.
Yeah, and that's with the internet. The issue with the time on the computers, I was on Sego right before I came here. They put in a rule that you're only allowed 2 hours before lunch and 2 hours after lunch on the computer. no matter if it's sitting idle for 4 hours straight, and then you get on, use your 2 hours, and then it sits idle all night long till the next day. You cannot use it more than the 2 hours. And that was put in effect because of the patient on another unit that was using the computer quite a bit and to do his legal work. And that was their remedy.
Oh, gosh.
And it wasn't applied to all units. It was only applied to that unit because he was coming there. So,
yeah,
so that's about all I got for tonight. But
I hope things
you.
Get better, Tim. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I did tell Jackie
Tim.
That I wanted to see you guys.
Oh, shit.
And she... she said she would let you know, and I said, well, can you give me a little bit of upfront notice before the IOC ladies are going to call so I can be prepared to talk to them? And she says, well, they haven't called me or let me know. They just call. And I know that's BS. You guys are a little bit more prepared than that. Trust me, I know that. If you do all this, you're not just going to slack on that.
No, we usually call and ask them to let the units know so we don't have to go through so much trouble trying to get connected because you haven't been on our end trying to get connected to the units.
Yeah.
It would be a little bit of a challenge at times.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm saying she says that, oh, they didn't ever call me and tell me that they were calling. So. Yeah. All right.
Thank
well,
you.
Thank you. Thank
Anyone
you.
Anyone else?
Here's someone else.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, I just had a quick question. I'm kind of a rookie. I'm not really familiar with this whole process. And I'm grateful for you guys just to be here, this platform and all that kind of stuff, and people can kind of vocalize their concerns and people can relate and people can come together.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I take notes and I would like your full name and if
I'm
you
gonna,
minute.
I'm going to remain anonymous. You can call me Xavier if you like.
Well, I can put anonymous. That's perfect. Thank you.
Cool. You call me Vendetta. V for Vendetta. No, I'm just kidding. So I'm just kind of curious. Are we doing therapy sessions or is there legal recourse? You guys make suggestions. What actions, what exactly can be done?
What we're here to do is to look into any allegations of human rights violations, and if people don't feel safe or they feel there's retribution, anything where we feel that human rights have been violated. Since getting into the hospital is challenging when they have for people on the committee, because everyone's a volunteer and most people work during the day, most members don't have the opportunity to meet with patients. So we had the thought that every once in a while we would open it up to have it be like a community forum, educational. Generally, we review action items. We ask hospitals to look into situations. So this was something to where the committee could ask questions and learn a little bit more, since not everyone is able to go into the hospital and visit during the community forums and talk to a wide variety of patients.
Okay. You think there's a more diplomatic, aggressive way of going about it, to instead of asking but more demanding in a respectful way? Because it seems that a lot of people have issues that have been ongoing for a long time, and they make their complaints, and then you guys are gonna, you guys are gonna make an effort to ask and then look for a remedy, but then no remedy happens, and then the same people or the same different complaints get spoken, and then nothing really happens. And I'm not being demanding. I'm just kind of curious on if there's another ulterior way of going about it where we actually start to see results. Because all I think I really care about is just results.
Yeah, and we hear you. We wish we had more authority as well. Someone
mentioned that I don't really know him very well. Someone by the name of Dr. Jack Potts, he ended up showing up one time. And he mentioned that you guys had a hell of a lot of more authority than you guys actually are led on to believe, that you're not actually utilizing your power the way you can be using it. But I don't know. This is all like hearsay. So I was just kind of bringing it up and bringing it to the forefront to see if maybe something could be done that isn't being done because.
Oh, we are trying. We did meet with the governor's office and we're asking to meet with the Department of Health. And
oh, wow.
There is a lot going on currently. There's been a lot of, there's been a lot of reporters reaching out to the IOC because a lot of attention has been focused on Arizona State Hospital because of the recent events. So, I mean, I don't think you guys always see what's going on in an outside world, but there is a lot of attention that, and there have been things, there was legislatively changes last year to move the PSRB back to the Superior Court. So
you know what we could do is start maybe putting those things more frequently, more clearly in the minutes so that when the patients read the minutes, they can kind of see what things we're doing outside. Because I know we talk about things here, but then we go and do things afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'll try and be better about putting those things in the minutes too.
Okay. So there is a lot of attention.
Do the patients even have access to the minutes? Can they look that up?
I don't know. Larry,
they're supposed to be posted, but I don't remember exactly.
They are posted on the Arizona Department of Administration's, the IOC. I don't know whether that's a blocked site or permitted site. I wouldn't think it's blocked for the patients, but I don't know.
I thought we had discussed the bulletin board. That was like years ago, I feel like, at this point, but maybe we need to revisit it.
They haven't even had, you know, the ability to know that we're going to call in. So they have not posted the IOC's agenda. So what makes us think that it's going to end up on the bulletin board?
Yeah, well, I did call in and ask that they make sure that the agenda was posted in all units and that all units knew that they were welcome to come to the meeting. I was.
So who's on right now? Did that happen today? From the patient. I'm sorry, I don't know who's on because it was anonymous.
Oh,
but
Xavier. Did you guys get? I don't think so. Okay, I think the consensus is that we didn't receive one. It didn't get posted on the bulletin. Probably an accident because she's been pretty consistently posting it.
Okay. And I did call and ask to make sure.
So quick question to the committee. You think there's a diplomatic way of resolving some of our issues since there seems to be a mutual benefit? Because a headache for us is a headache for them and vice versa. And I feel like there is a common bond instead of a divide and conquer and polarity that the world likes to try to project. It would be nice if there was some sort of common bond and some sort of resolutions that we can come to. Instead of it having to get to such an extreme circumstance situation where you have everyone up in arms and there needs to be such extreme remedies and interventions, it'd be nice if we can have more conversations and dialogues. Maybe I'm living in a utopia, but I don't know, man. It's so exhausting to
We have tried. Yeah. I mean, if there's anything that our committee members that have been on for a while, we have gone overboard to try to be collaborative with administration. It's their decision not to participate in our IOC meetings. All the other agencies that have oversights on them do participate. And I know that they find it problematic because patients are on the call, but in any open meeting, any public meeting, patients can show up to the other IOCs and they have. So I think that Larry Allen from Arizona Department of Administration, I think Larry kind of agrees. We've tried for the last couple of years to see if we could get them to work more collaboratively and come to the meetings.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for the response and thank you for understanding. Okay, so you've made attempts. You've made attempts on asking night. Okay, so it sounds like you've made attempts to be diplomatic. You've tried and hooted and hollered in respectful, poetic ways. You haven't really gotten a cooperative response. So what do you feel is the next step? I know you guys mentioned that you guys went to the governor's office and you guys are asking and asking. What do you feel is the next step that you feel is going to breed results?
Well, I think that our next step is Department of Health Services, because that's where that is where they were told they didn't have to come to the meetings because of some things that went on in the previous Human Rights Committee with the previous chair, and they were told that they didn't have to attend. So it's a different committee. It's a different Department of Administrative Director. So that's the next logical step. So that's where we're going.
Do you know the name of the person that's in charge of DHS? Is there a particular person that answers for them?
It used to be Dr. Kara Crist, and she moved on. So there's an interim person now that his name's blanking me. Is it Tom? Larry, is his name Tom? I don't know him.
Don Harrington.
Okay. So he's the interim director.
Okay. All right. Is there anything that you would request from the patients here that would be helpful to accomplish any of the goals that need to be accomplished? Is there any collaborative efforts that people can come together on?
Well, we asked them, if there is clear evidence of a retaliation and we get permission, then we'd like to look into it, but we need the patients for that. For us to look into it, the patients generally have to sign a release of information so they can send records to the committee. And again, it has to be something that's documented, or you have to have witnesses that can attest to that, or the videotapes have to be good enough to where we can validate what's being said.
Cool. I'm not going to take any more time. Time is precious and valuable. That's coming from someone that's been locked up. So thank you guys very much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. And the force be with everyone. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Okay, so let's go back into the meeting.
This is Kareem and Cottonwood. I just had a question for you guys. When would you think you might be doing in-person visits?
We'd have to ask if they'd let us in.
I know the virtual visits started with COVID. I was wondering when it might return.
I would have to ask.
So Lori,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Lori, it's Dee. Like, if we can come visit and we can come to ITDP meetings, why would we not be able to visit with the patients one on one?
That seems very logical to me, but
silly me.
We'd have to ask to make sure. Again, if we do in-person visits, then we'd have to make sure we have at least two people that could come and do the visits. I can ask.
Okay,
so
I appreciate that.
So you give
that.
Me
Thank
enough
you.
Advance. Yeah, you give me enough advance notice, Lori. I'll be there. I've been triple vaccinated. I think that should be sufficient, and a mask.
Yeah, so have I. So, okay, well, thank you. So let's go back into our meeting so we can go over, pick up at the last, let's see. So ASH administration, their update, like I told you about the pet therapy, that they now have that company vetted. The other thing is that COVID, the booster shots are getting, patients are getting booster shots currently. And I asked if they were going to mandate shots, and they said they hadn't seen anything as far as mandating staff being vaccinated. They said nothing that they knew of. 65% of their staff is vaccinated currently. I also noted, which I, you know, it's hard to get a grip of incident and accidents because of the fact that we get them in PDFs and we don't get them in a format that's easy, and we don't get the doc. It doesn't stay on the website very long, but I was seeing more incidents on the forensic side, and usually it's dominated by civil. It's always mostly civil and once in a while you get a forensic unit incident report. But they said that that it wasn't as high as it's ever been, but I did see some. So we could go ahead and move on to, that was all of the ASH administration. The other thing in open business, do we want Larry to go ahead and set up a meeting with the interim director, since there's no timeline for the new director to be announced? Should we go ahead and meet with the interim director, Don?
Yes.
Arrington?
This is Dee. I'll motion that.
Okay.
I'll second. No.
Okay. Melissa seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, so we'll go ahead and we'll have discussions. I think that we'll want to discuss a couple things in our meeting with him, and I propose that we discuss the progression and passes, that we discuss, again, having the agency administration come to the meetings to be more collaborative, and also discuss staffing shortages. That's something, based on what we're hearing, I'd like to make a request to see staffing on all units, because they have reports, they know their vacancies or not. I'd like to request that we see staffing numbers for all units for the last 6 months to see what it is, what is optimal, and then what is it currently for the last 6 months.
I'll make the motion on that, please, Lori.
Okay, Dee, and I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
So moved, because I think something has to be done. I understand that all hospitals are having challenges, but it's not like a regular hospital where you can say, we're not doing electives today. We're closing for electives. People are there and they have nowhere to go and they need to be cared for, and it can't be an unsafe environment. And if they have to pay hazard pay to get it fully staffed, so be it. They should go ask the governor or the legislature for emergency money. I think we're hearing it over and over that it's a real issue, and it's going to impede therapy, impede people having the ability to go out in the outdoors, and it's a safety concern. So. Thank you. Okay, so the other thing is, we did have another allegation, a letter from staff sent to Larry, and Larry sent it to us that Barb could read. There also was a news station report where some staff went to the news talking about this staffing shortages. So this is something that even employees are feeling is not a safe environment for them or the patients. So Barb, do you want to go over what that is, and then I'll go over the incident and accidents? And it's pound or star six to unmute. I can start with the incident and accident so I can get through these. So the Sentinel events that occurred, we had.
Okay, I'm unmute. Am I unmuted now?
You're unmuted.
Okay. Did you want me to actually read it?
You can highlight the essence of it or read part of it.
Okay.
Paraphrase.
So this letter was written in regards to the patient who committed suicide on the forensic unit on the 21st of October. The writer is registry staff, but this letter to me was incredibly disturbing, as
as she, what she has said was that no staff on pinion went to help him at all. And he had been talking about death to staff members, and they, like a couple of staff members, and nobody listened to him seriously and, you know, told him to get over it and, or just laughed. You know, basically she said he was seeking help and nobody listened to him. She commented about how the staff that's there isn't always paying attention. And the nurse who responded to the code pulled the scissors out of the patient's neck and he bled out. And I'm not a clinical person, but she said that, you know, you don't do that because that would really cause him to bleed out. And my guess is, because I've heard things like knitting needles not being pulled out, that that's what saved them staying in there. That there is another, there's so much going on in the unit, and that drugs are coming in by staff, and that, which is astounding. And she was trying to get in touch with the news or have us or have Larry forward this to him. The staff are constantly putting themselves and the patients in danger because they're working understaffed. You know, and then she concluded again with, they're so short staffed that half the time they close the mall area. And her feeling is that if staff had responded, listened and responded, that this patient would still be alive. And I just find it reprehensible. The things that have been said today, by patients on the call and this registry staff person are just like, my jaw just drops.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dee. I can tell you that I am clinical. I'm a nurse. I've worked critical care for 30 years. And I can tell you what, if that's true, what happened with the patient, the response from staff and the scissors, that's a fatal error.
That I kind of thought that because of things I've heard before. So is there something, you know, my question to that is there something that we can do to, you know, do we know who that, the nurse was who responded to the code? And, you know, can she, you know, action, I would say action, it should be investigated if action needs to be taken against her.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is how, what is a step to investigate?
Well, I think I can read you the incident report, and there are a couple things that stand out. I think what we could do after you hear this, then we may want to ask about training because you want it to be a teachable moment. And I know, you know, with my husband being an emergency doc for all those years, when they have rebar going through people or anything, they cut it and bring them to a surgery before you ever remove so you can control the bleeding and control the situation.
Right, but,
yeah.
And I understand.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. I understand that, Lori. But what, you know, shouldn't someone who has a registered nurse degree know that you wouldn't?
This is D, and I am a registered nurse, and yes, they should know that.
Yes.
Thank you.
I would think that. So here was the incident report, and they talk about the date, October 20th. It was in the forensic rehab art room. The patient entered, and they checked out art supplies, glue sticks, full
size. Lori, I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you want to give me the report number real quick?
Oh, sorry about that.
It's okay. We're kind of going out of order.
ASH 2021-4255. The patient was in the art rehab, checked out glue sticks, scissors, cardstock paper to work on his postage stamp collection. They presented COM affect typical mood presentation, and they were on the north side of the art table and working. The rehab staff was watching to monitor the proper use of scissors due to hand tremors. They were observed to be working on the project using the scissors in an appropriate manner for intended use to cut out postage stamps for a short period of time. Then the patient asked at about, that was at 1300. At 1327, they went to the restroom, and they were in the restroom for a long period of time. At about 5 minutes, the rehab staff knocked on the door and asked if they were okay. The person responded that they had diarrhea, they don't feel good, they'll be in there a while. A few minutes later, staff knocked on the door, no response. They called the person, both staff knocked on the door, patient didn't respond. They called rehab staff to assist to going into the bathroom to check. They knocked loudly again, no response. They stated they needed to respond or they were coming in. They unlocked the door and found the patient laying on the floor with a large amount of blood on the scissors. Here it says the scissors on the floor next to him. So I don't know which is true. They initiated the cold blue at 1351. They had the crash cart. All the people that were in our group were called back to their units, called the forensic doctors to assist with the code. There were a lot of responders, medical, nursing, and providers running to try to assist. They called, the emergency services came, and they arrived 1359. And it was reported to the, they accompanied them to the hospital and reported that the patient had stabbed themselves in the neck with a pair of scissors that they had checked out. Again, I think, obviously that was a period of time from 1300 to 1351 when the code was called. I'm not sure exactly when they opened the door. It was right before that. So from 1327 to 1351. So for almost, 25 minutes, 26 minutes, he was probably in the restroom. So it doesn't have that in the report. We could ask. So that was, we could ask if the scissors were in there or were they found by the side or did someone pull them out? Because we've heard different things. I think
investigation though, like from a police standpoint, because that would indicate to me if somebody else touched those scissors, there would be multiple fingerprints on. I guess maybe that would be really hard. But I as a nurse, I think that if somebody stabs themselves in the neck with a pair of scissors, and they're left in a bathroom for, even 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I don't know that they would be able to pull them out unless it was just a reflex. I don't know. There's just like a lot of questions here. I don't think that the information is clear and in detail. And obviously, I take it there's no cameras in the bathrooms.
No.
Is that correct?
There are never cameras in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, I think there shouldn't be, but I'm just curious.
I think we need clarification. That's, that those notes don't provide enough information.
I've written enough incident reports myself, and I know that they have to be very in detail, and to me that doesn't quite reach that threshold, and that's just my opinion, though.
They do, after quality management was reviewing, they do have notes that Phoenix Police came on after the code blew, and they asked questions for their reports. They took pictures. Essential information was taken by the officers. They gathered more information. They took pictures of the evidence. They also took possession of the scissors used by the patients.
Yeah, and then what?
Okay, that's good.
I'm sure that they're doing an investigation. I would think.
Can we ask Lori? I mean, can we ask if there was at least a police investigation so that we know that we have some route to follow up on this, even if there's no other information that we receive from this point?
I think so. We can ask. So do we have a motion?
Before we motion, I'm sorry. Oh.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I had a question. I know, and maybe we have to keep them separate. Obviously, this is the important piece to follow up on. But it also seems like there were a lot of errors prior to the fatal error.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if there's any recommendations we can make for like further or enhanced, I don't know, like, you know, investigation.
I was kind of writing up the question as we were talking, and I think we need to ask, like, what is the investigation protocol for this type of incident? Will there be training provided? Will new policies mm-hmm. be written? Was there a police investigation? I think that we can all, like, wrap that into one question. And I think I heard that Dee said she'll motion, and I'll second if we want to do
that. Thank you.
That sounds great. I think, too, Melissa.
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I think when we, it was Ashley and Alice and I, when we were in the meeting with the administration about progression, and we tried to associate, it was very clear from Dr. Bowen that they did not believe that this patient was depressed or hopeless and had nothing to do with this suicide. So, you know, we were indicating we thought it was that the patient was removed from, brought back from CRU and he was depressed, and they're saying no, that he had even seen the provider that day and that he wasn't depressed.
Okay.
This is Ashley. If I could just weigh in on what the police are probably doing. Uh-huh. Obviously, I don't know. Probably, if I had to guess, unlikely they're doing an investigation if they ruled it a suicide. That doesn't mean they got rid of the scissors. They could be still sitting at the evidence, Phoenix Police evidence warehouse down on Elwood. But I think it's a good start to ask the hospital. They may not know police investigation, and then we could maybe ask, we could do a public records request, but I just being realistic, I doubt they're doing an investigation, the Phoenix Police Department. Maybe I could be wrong, but probably not.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ashley.
So, Lori, this is Dee. I'm happy to go through those records because that's my background. I also did some legal nurse consulting for a personal injury attorney in Tucson. So I'm familiar with the medical part of things and partially with the legal aspect of things. So I'm happy to, if you can get those records and you want somebody to look over them, I'm happy to do that. I have another question from earlier. You talked about how the information you're receiving is coming in a PDF, and that's hard for you to. Okay, so I don't understand why, but I'm really good with PDFs, and I know how to search for information in them. That takes almost no time flat because of my background as a legal nurse consulting. So if there's some way I can help there, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, I think I know how to use the search function to search for key terms and stuff, but I think it would be helpful if we got our reports in the manner that I think the other IOCs get it in Excel and spreadsheets, because then you can do all kinds of analysis on all types of other factors and metadata and do pivots and look at trends. You can't really do trends unless you take the information out of there and create things. But I'd love if you'd want to look at some of the records, because any of the IOC members can. If you want to go in and grab them yourself, all you have to do is go through the training, and Larry can help. I think Larry and maybe CJ. I'd have to see who does it now. Okay, the next.
Okay, well, I'm happy. Yeah. Okay.
The next Sentinel event was on the civil side, and this suicide was attempt, which ended up in a death.
I'm sorry, Lori. Sorry to interrupt one more time.
Patient record number?
No, hang on. I want to ask one more. Okay, so we asked about, we want to know if the reports about the scissors being pulled out were accurate. Do we want to ask that? Is there a motion for that?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you think the other question covers it?
We can ask in that same grouping about this if the scissors were indeed pulled out or were they found on the floor.
Okay, got it. So then I also wanted to know, did you want, I mean, all motion if you think this is what we need to do, but do we want to say that we want the reports in a spreadsheet form rather than the PDF, just like
we,
the other?
We did. They said they can't.
Oh, they said they can't. Okay, I understand. Okay, yeah. I just didn't want to miss anything. Thank you. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so this one is ASH 2021-4431. And this was a code blue, like the other one, and it was on the civil campus. And this patient was eating their dinner, and he was COS, LOS, one-on-one, which means he's in close active monitoring. And that person that was his monitor called a nurse to the hall. They reported that the patient had shoved the whole burrito down his throat, and the RN and the staff immediately went into the patient room and was noted that they were choking, observed, still trying to shove more and more food down his mouth while, you know, it was apparent that he was choking. Tears were running down his face. They immediately tried the Heimlich maneuver while the rider called a medical alert. And then at that point, the person stopped breathing. They checked, no pulse. It was changed from a medical alert to code blue. And that chest compressions, rescue breaths were immediately initiated. And until the emergency responders arrived on site and took over. Fire department was there. EMTs left the unit. When they left, they were still doing chest compressions and no vitals were obtainable. There was a note that during the code blue, the wheels fell off the crash cart. When it was being wheeled to the patient's room, but the crash cart was otherwise usable and all the required items were inside the cart. That was noted. The patient, it's not in this report, but it was in the news report, which I saw on Channel 12. I think it was in that one. It was in one of the reports where they said that, I don't know who it was, whether it was other patients or the family's brother of one of these people that said that they had attempted other suicide attempts. I don't know. But so that was very sad. This person wasn't pronounced dead right away like the other patient. This patient, I think, was taken off life support after several days. If I recall correctly. So that was the other Sentinel event.
Lori, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, or maybe this is a question we want to ask them. I'm familiar with Sentinel events in the police use of force context and like airplane crashes and train derailments. That's usually where they use it. And I'm familiar with that process. So what is the hospital doing when they're doing a Sentinel event review? Can we ask them what they're doing?
I know that on the first one, because I did ask, they were doing something called a psychological investigation, like a psychological review of what led up to this, where, you know, so they're trying to look into it to see what they can learn. We can ask if we can see the output of that analysis and that report that they're doing, and ask if they're doing it on both of them.
Yeah, I think that'd be, I mean, the one that I'm familiar with is usually a report generated. Usually it's a bunch of different people who look at the event from all different perspectives and weigh in on what could have been done better. Mm-hmm. Usually the sentence, like, it's not to place blame on someone, it's to learn from. Mm-hmm. At least the ones I'm familiar with, it's to learn, like, what could we have done better. So I'm just curious how they're addressing those. And even if they can't provide the report for some reason, if they could explain their process, I think it might be interesting for us.
I think we could ask for both, ask for the process and ask for the output of the reports of the investigations or the analysis that they're doing.
Okay, I'll make a motion. It's Ashley.
Okay, Ashley. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay, Barb seconds. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? So moved. And I'll just touch on a few others. This one I'm just putting in there because it's starting to appear in some of the incident reports that they're indicating short staffing. So in this one, ASH 2021-4119, which was a patient threatening other patients, the person writing the report mentions that they were in the day room on the east side of a unit when someone got up fast and started to assault him, and they were trying to carry a chair to hit their peers, but they couldn't since someone ran faster than. But it says that the events through to see clearly how it happened, since it was hard to see clearly how it happened since I was by myself in the day room at that time. So this person was the only one in the day room. So it's starting to show up in some of the incident reports. Let me see if I see any others that are noteworthy.
Lori, this is Ashley again, sorry. I know we made a previous motion to ask for staffing numbers. Could we mm-hmm. ask for two parts of that? One, like, how many staff are actually there? And then two, like, how many are supposed to be there?
Yeah. What's optimal staffing?
If I have no clue if one is supposed to be in the day room or two, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I
asked for the staff numbers for the last 6 months, what's ideal, and then what's actually happening, like, versus. Yeah.
Perfect.
Great. I just noted this one, ASH 2021-4172, because it, we generally don't see many from the forensic side, and this was a patient threatening another patient. It seems like we're getting, to me, it seemed like we were getting more than typical. Let me see if there's any other ones that are noteworthy. I see lots of registry staff. The other one that I had a question today to the administration was on ASH 2021-4293, and it was a person trying to harm themselves using a bra. And I was like,
using a what?
A bra. Their bra.
Oh.
So I said, okay. Oh, I never thought of that. What do you guys do? And they said that if they have self-harm and they're doing that, then they don't get a bra, right? But even shirts can cause problems too. It can be ligature. Let's see if I was. This one was unusual, and I already asked questions about it, so we'll see what you guys think. This one is ASH 2021-4310. And this patient self-harming and self-injury, but they went into that a patient was bleeding from their face, and they called, and they went to the bathroom and found that they had inserted batteries into each nostril and was banging the nose on the toilet to push the batteries further in. So the patient had to, go to the hospital, obviously. They went by paramedics to Valleywise. My question, because we have a lot of battery swallowing and self-injury, I said, wouldn't it be safer if they were rechargeable and you had a charging station in the nurse's station, or behind plexiglass, you have really short charging cables, a couple inches, safer than batteries? And they said that that was an idea, because we, you know, swallowing batteries are dangerous, and they can bleed, they can burn through your esophagus and stuff. So, then another one, 2021-4315, again, it was a different patient, but swallowed 6 batteries and had to. So it's something that does happen. Here was another incident.
Did you be swallowing 6 batteries?
A patient swallowed 6 batteries.
See, and that's also, you know, I'll know that that's like a staffing issue too, because if you can get 6 down before anybody sees you, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. And let me see if it says where he did that. And they reported it themselves to the nurse. 6 batteries, a toothbrush. And,
oh, wow. Nobody even saw it. They didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hmm. Okay, here's another one, 2021-4317. This one, RN was a civil rover RN. They had to go to Valleywise to bring a patient back in TSDs. They were in 4-point restraints, but they belonged to Valleywise. And the patient was not being cooperative, kept trying to bite ASH staff. And they stayed there for, they stayed for 2 hours. Oh, the staff that was there before the nurse got over there said they were trying to calm the person down. They were yelling, agitated. When the nurse suggested PRNs prior to transport, they said he was already discharged, so Valleywise would not give him PRNs. And then they couldn't take the TSDs off. There was no way to give PRNs or chemically restrain the patient. It would have been helpful if this RN could have given them in a parking lot or in the van. This nurse was given a 0 report on the patient prior to leaving to go get him with TSDs. Even when asked, there was not clear information. So there was not a clear handoff on how difficult this was going to be, so they could have planned better for it. So it seems like it was not a fun time. You can see why staff is hard at times to maintain. Patients and staff are getting assaulted often on the civil unit, primarily. We had others. Let me see if there's anything notable. There was another one on the forensic unit. And again, often we don't see that many. What caught my attention on this one, ASH 2021-4099, was that they're talking about TSDs being removed from the patient and the patient acting up. And I said, it's so unusual because you usually don't see TSDs. I don't see them in the report on forensic. And I asked if it was a civil patient on forensic. And they checked and they said, yes, it is. But the patient's been there for years. So that was just had my curiosity. So that was our incident and accidents. Whew, it's been a long one. Anything else? Any new business? And again, membership recruitment. We have a forensic patient that would like to join. I'm going to reach out to Jackie and make sure she gets the application. Okay.
That's so the gentleman who was anonymous earlier, or is this?
No, it was a woman, Kay.
Okay.
That asked. She asked when we were on the forensic community forum. I think it was me and Jackie, and she asked, she wanted to join. And I said, can we get her an application?
Okay.
Yeah. And we do have another person that has left Ash that would like to, but we've asked him to wait until he's been out in the community because the transitions are big. So we can open it to public comment, and we will limit it to 3 minutes since it's a long meeting. Do we have any other public comment from anyone that hasn't shared? Okay. Hearing none. I will let you guys know about the resolution from the governor's office as soon as I hear back from them, and as soon as Larry can set up a time.
Okay.
Request to the committee members to see who can come. We can have up to 4 people attend. We can't have a quorum, or we break our public meeting rules. And then just for planning, did you find it useful to be able to ask questions of the patients?
You know, I'm not, on one hand, I think it can clarify some things. However, it seems that that information would also come out and we could question them when we have the patient, the public comments.
You can't do it in public comment. Yeah, it's it's against public meeting rules. That's why if we want to do that, it has to be marked as an educational section. It has to be different than the public comment.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. Yeah, I think it's a lot more efficient to be able to interact. As long as you know, that's okay to do, I think. Having that dialogue, because in public comment, there's times that we want to respond to things. We might have answers. We have to wait till the next meeting,
yeah.
Or wait till a patient says so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if we hear nothing else, then we could adjourn. But before we do, let's everyone wish Ashley an easy birth of her child, which is pending. So let us know.
Yay, yeah. Good luck, Ashley.
Let us know.
Congratulations, yeah. Ashley.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate everyone joining, and I hope it was useful and we get some good resolutions for some of these lingering issues that have been going on.
And thank you to the units, too. We really appreciate
you.
Participation.
Yeah.
Thank
great
you.
Job, thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy, thank for you. Hanging in there.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Educational. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving,
very
everyone.
Thankful,
yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Very informative. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.